Mahaika Gyap in Green Hill. The pole RFE 34. Looks like you're missing the number, but the power line is resting on the gate of one of the residents there. A power line in Mahaika Gyap Green Hill off of pole RFE 34. I'm not sure that's the entire number, if it's missing one, but I know because of the app, Light and Power, I know you can trace it. There's a power line resting on the gate of one of the residents there. Is concerned about it. Hopefully your monitors will hear us. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hi.
How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. What's up?
I'm cool. Listen to me. I'm trying to understand this thing with ICB and the shares, right?
Mm-hmm.
The company that bought the 51%, they automatically had to offer to purchase the rest of the shares.
Under the laws, yes.
Under the laws of Barbados, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, my question is this. The 49% that is owned, that the other people have, mm-hmm. do they have to sell them?
They have very little options.
Why?
Because once the company gets to a certain level, they got one or two things to do. They either accede to their request, or they hold out for a higher price, or they hold on. In most cases,
right.
somebody cave and they get more and they get more and they get more. It happened with a couple other companies I could think of where shareholders held out for a higher price. They got a higher price and some took, and according to the laws, the company, well, then they would delist, which would cause
right.
more issues for the minority shareholders.
Right. But I'm saying, in all this time that I've heard this debate going on, I have not yet heard anyone advise the small shareholders
to hold on,
not to sell.
I think someone did, but how many still remain is the question, I suppose.
But that is what stuff happened from the beginning. I come and advise the people to don't sell the shares.
But people don't listen to advice, and you know that too.
But they call on the radio and complain, so I think they should listen, Dennis, man.
Well,
but it's a,
who call and how many?
I know, but the point is this. I heard people who know about these stocks and shares coming, and they have not clearly heard any of them tell people, hold on to your shares. Don't sell.
But let me ask you this. If they delist, what are you going to do with the shares that you're holding on to?
Well, they should still be worth. They still have to pay you then what the shares are actually worth, wouldn't they?
No, because they're the ones who determine what they're buying at. You
yeah,
see, that's the fight that you face, you know. Here's the fight that you face.
Uh-huh.
If you have someone, and I saw, I saw it written in the newspaper. I don't think it came out on air. In the discussions about the shares, I think it was admitted that there may be some people who may have bought their shares for, let's say, a dollar.
Yeah.
So for them, selling at 86 cents ain't much of a loss. It's the people
Agreed.
Who bought at, let's say, $3 or $4 mm-hmm. who may say, I'm not selling for 86 cents. But if the shares are delisted, they're not
yeah.
on the market, then you can't sell them on the market to anybody other than the person who owns the majority shares. What do you do with them? If the person say, look, I gave you 32 cents, you should take it when it was at 65.
But the question I would ask Dennis then, right? If
mm-hmm.
they delist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they want, and
the
people who own the 49% shares, for argument's sake, then want to sell their shares at some time in the future,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't they have to give them a fair price for the shares?
No.
They
Why?
Can just get them when they feel like?
Yeah.
No, I'm asking. There's a fair trading
yeah.
commission. I'm asking.
A what? you know something?
Commission.
Yes, sir. Listen. You know something? You know what my feeling is?
Yeah.
My feeling is this, right? You remember I was talking earlier about the hospital? I mentioned the change in name from the casualty to accident and emergency.
An emergency, yeah.
I think Fair Trading Commission need to change their name.
Oh, there's that by?
Because, sir, either what they're supposed to do, the public does not understand. In other words, the name gives the public a wrong sense of a security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Or else they don't get involved unless it gets to a certain level. Because I've heard the Fair Trading Commission say, for example, we can't bring a charge and be the arbiters of the charge at the same time. Right. So if I wanted to query why one company charges me X for services and another one does, I have to write the letter outlining which company charges what. Now, for example, it does not handle cellular phones, cellular services.
Yeah.
Only fixed lines.
Yeah.
Right. So there are certain areas where the public may believe there is cover, and the others, they do not. It depends on what the legislation says.
Well, I think in this case, ICBL, that maybe then there should be a bit more information coming from those who know.
Yeah, and so
the company,
and the people who have shares, it is in their interest to get that information from not the Fair Trading Commission. There's a Barbados Stock Exchange.
All right.
They are the people you call, and you ask them, look, what are my rights? What can I do? What can't I do? Where am I in, you know, the general scheme of things if this should happen?
I agree. That's what's needed. Somebody need to come forward.
Some people, don't like to ask. Two, because they may think it may make them look stupid if they ask. So they hope that somebody else does it for them. But nobody wants to come forward and do it unless they have to.
Somebody, but maybe the government need to mandate somebody to come forward and explain to people. Because, I mean, it doesn't sit right with me. How could a share worth $3 and whatever it is, and then you got to sell for that price?
What happened? What happened? What happened with Sagicor? Was it any different?
I don't remember exactly what happened in Sagicor's case, you know, Dennis, to be honest.
Right.
But did the people get a little better deal?
It depends on what you call a better deal, because they were offered, sir, they were offered cash shares that had a different rating from the shares they had previously.
Yeah.
So one would have to check to see what their dividends look like, what the options are.
Right.
Light and Power, when Emera took over, for example, gave people again shares in the new company. So they were offered different deals as opposed to sell me all your shares and take 55 cents on the dollar and that's it, full stop. When Royal Bank of Trinidad and Tobago Limited sold back to Royal Bank of Canada, there were people in Royal Bank Trinidad and Tobago Limited, employees who had stock ownership shares, who were not offered stock ownership in the sell back to RBC, and they were upset. And they went through all sorts of loopholes. And,
I think the conversation needs to go on with this thing, and somebody needs to come up, man, and spell out to people exactly the pros and cons. Maybe the 14% led by National Insurance, who seem to have the biggest or the small.
Correct.
To come and say something, you know.
They
got lawyers and they got people that that should be able to speak to these issues. to make people, you know, that don't have the main resource that to go to employ a lawyer.
Sir,
them people,
I believe that as custodians for Barbados's national's money, the National Insurance should have said in a release or whatever whether they plan to accept it, whether they think it's a fair offer, whether they're negotiating. They should say something.
Exactly.
I find that there is too much silence and the public is left to speculate sometimes as to what is happening with their funds.
Exactly. I agree. All right, Dennis, thanks, man. We'll see where it goes.
We will see indeed, sir.
You take care, man.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And I will again go back to my favorite hobby horse. When you have people who are supposed to be communication experts, please allow them to communicate. I know we don't listen well. I know we don't bother until it affects us. I know we don't like reading either. And I'm using the royal we, because I like to read. Brastax, good afternoon.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Good afternoon to you.
Hi.
The 2 points I would want to raise is, if I may, I noticed there's a Caribbean Prime Minister who was asking for a fifth consecutive term.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I say to myself, why? When we look, Mr. Johnson, at those African countries who are entrenched 15 and 20 and 30 years, you know, it is very difficult to get them to move. And more often than not, the country is extremely stagnated. And when these presidents and prime ministers leave, they have these fat bank accounts in Zurich and London and all over the place. And they, while they're in power, they use the defense force and the army and the police to quell any protest, or rather it be legitimate or otherwise. And they become entrenched for so long, and the country don't seem to make any progress. It worries me deeply, you know? It worries me deeply, and I wonder, why would one person think that the only body can rule a country is them for whatever period of time, or until they have passed, you know?
But they do it with the consent of the people who vote them back into power. Look, let me say to you.
But, Mr. Johnson, if I may cross you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
They do it with the consent of the people who vote them back into power.
Mm-hmm.
That is assumed. When a fellow becomes entrenched for so long, who knows what happens when he gets voted back in? You understand what I'm saying?
Sir, let me say to you. Having lived in more than one Caribbean country, I think I can speak about how they get back into power in some places. I could also speak about why they like to get back into power in some places. I remember having a conversation with me. He showed me the various prime ministers, and he made comments about one of them, and he called one an interregum. And he asked me if I understood Latin. I said, yeah. It means the one who comes between two kings. He said, good, because the person on that side is a king, and on this side the person is a king, and that person is the interregum. He came in between kings. So I know there are prime ministers who see themselves in that light. Kings, emperors, and kings and emperors rule for life. So there may be prime ministers who feel that way. there are prime ministers who make pronouncements. After me is you, and after you is you, and after that, any number can play. Now, that says that who the people want ain't had nothing to do with the people. This is my mandate, and this is how it will go. There are others who say, as I've heard said by a prime minister in one country, when I finish being prime minister, I can take a piece of the governor general. You know? So, that was said openly on a political platform. And people thumped and made noise and say, you know, you're a leader till we're dead. So, that's why I go back to the people who vote them into power. Because those people who make those statements have a certain following that will do what they want them to do. And they are certain they will have that support. What happens then is that there are others who don't have that kind of support, can't garner that kind of support, and anyone who sits in any position for too long, sir, becomes immune to criticism, and sometimes you're correct, their thinking becomes addled or stagnated, and you end up losing more than you gain. It's the challenge of the office.
Yeah, the other point I want to raise, Mr. Johnson, I am one of the victims of this ICBL debacle. I say victim-wise deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
My son and I, when the shares were being sold, I said to my son, you know, well, they say that we don't like, that people don't like investing and so on. Let us take a chance here. And I purchased some shares, and he an equal amount. I asked myself, Mr. Johnson, what is the role of the directors of that company in this instance? What function are they playing? Are they playing to insist that those minority shareholders get a fair deal? What, you know, what position are they holding? Not one of them, Mr. Johnson. Not one of them.
Remember, a couple of them resigned, didn't they? Didn't a couple members of the board resign, or management resign?
They're not saying something?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps they should have said something.
You know, it's a terrible thing, Mr. Johnson. And, you know, I have spoken to a lawyer, one of those activist lawyers, and he said, well, look, I am prepared to look at it. And so far, I haven't heard anything from him. But, you know, I my next option, I am going to go to the Fair Trade and see if they can do anything. And I have what they've been doing so far doesn't give me any encouragement, you know. But
that's what worries me, sir.
Take the chance.
So that's what worries me, when people are not sure of what to do when they're faced with the kind of situation that the minority shareholders of not only this company, because it's this company now, but other companies in general. And perhaps that's why, as well, I mentioned the OCM news story in the newspaper, where you have a shareholder named, but not named in our newspaper, named in, I think, perhaps the Trinidad newspaper, or perhaps they withheld the name to have to check to see if they did or they didn't. When you have a shareholder who decides to offload 600,000 or 300,000 shares, you ask yourself why, whether the person has
insight.
I ain't even got to inside information yet. I am going to what I call underhand. And I'm using the term underhand. Look, okay. I raised the question the last time I was talking to Douglas Skeet on the radio, okay? Where I said to him, if you have somebody who buys a company, I am not talking here about this present ICBL, I'm not pointing at any company, okay? You have someone with pockets deep enough to buy, let's say, 75% shares in a company. Let me pick Starcom Network as an example. If I decided to buy 75% shares in Starcom Network, force the other small shareholders out, take 100% control, and say the most the shares in Starcom Network is worth is $1.50 Barbados. People who bought their shares at $6 will cry foul.
Yeah.
No, but if I have enough to force them out, I buy it at $1.50 a share. And I say that's because the company this and advertising down and radio ain't making money and so on. A year from now, I suddenly say, I'm relinquishing all my shares in Starcom Network because there's this company called, I don't know, ABC International that wants to purchase Starcom Network as part of their Caribbean outreach. And I'm being paid $10 a share because I've made the company so good in 1 year, it's now worth $10. If you were a minority shareholder that I paid $1.60 for your shares in October, will you be happy if I made that statement in December of 2021? Or you will think that I knew that something coming in the pipe?
Yeah.
So that's why I agree with you. You have to pay attention to who are the directors, what are they doing, what are their interests? Because sometimes you have to ask yourself, who's representing my interest? And who's looking out for themselves somewhere down the road? Because of their, perhaps, interests in other companies that they know have an interest in the business they can buy.
Yeah, sir.
And those are questions that you have to ask.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for your comments as well. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello?
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have two main comments to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is in relation to the opinion in the Sunday Sun on page 38, where Mr. Bradley Clark made certain comments that, in my view, are very unfortunate. He is clearly very much uninformed about the fact of this year's CSC results issue. And interestingly enough, and maybe ironically, he opens his comment and his discourse by indicating that he's motivated by the uninformed comment. And he goes on to ask why see why Harrison College did so well. And then basically put school against school, lauded and Harrison College for its scholarships and awards, and indeed they need to be congratulated on that. But he also then puts them against other schools, which in my view is a very divisive move and is one that we do not need in this situation at this time. What he may not know is that, and Ms. Wade, the principal, had put it out in the public domain, that Harrison College had many more students lined up for scholarships and awards this year who were negatively impacted by the issue. So while he's happy and lauding the 23 awardees, there were many more who could have made it there. And apart from that, if the issues are not corrected, if the issue, he's forgetting that this is not just affecting Kate. There's CSET at the fifth form or fourth and fifth form level, and there's Kate 1, which is primarily done by the lower six group, and then there's Kate 2, which is done by upper six. So he's lauding the performance of Harrison College for the upper six. But what about the lower six? What about those who have just moved into the current upper six? If these issues are not corrected or if their grades are not improved, Harrison College will have no scholarship or exhibition awards next year. He's looking at one end of the spectrum, but he doesn't see that this has an impact for 2 years for those Cape students. And the impact is across schools. It is across subjects. It's not one, and that's why it's so complex to analyze. It's across subjects. It's not just in so-called academic subjects like English and math and physics, and it impacts technical and vocational subjects. You know, so it's broad-based, and it affects different schools to varying degrees. Yes, Harrison College might have done very well this year relative to Queen's College because the impact on them for Kate 2 may have been less than Queen's College. But next year, if you look at it, because the impact on them for Kate 1 was more than Queen's College's, then you have a reverse. So this is no time to be jumping up and trying to put down some schools and elevate the others. You give congratulations where congratulations are due, but at the end of the day, we have students. And these students are gifted. Some are with their mind. We have other students who are gifted with their hands, with their feet, and some are blessed to have all. But at the end of the day, we celebrate when persons do well, but we have to be very careful with the types of comments that he has put out into the public domain. Harrison College, he then lauded the Caribbean Studies performance and the tuition at Harrison College and lauded the teachers. But hang on, Harrison College had students with grade ones in the same Caribbean Studies, but pitiful scores, never yet seen, fives and sixes and sevens in other subjects where they're expected to do well. So I don't know where he gets off focusing on Caribbean studies. This thing is a cross subject and it's not an issue that's just surrounding Caribbean studies or even just the SBA. So Harrison College did not come away unscathed by the issues as one might think if they read his comments. And so clearly his writing is uninformed. I dare say it's biased. It's lopsided. And it's insensitive in its nature. It is just totally insensitive. And it's unfortunate that he has decided to throw what, in my view, amongst the shared so-called uninformed comment. At the end of the day, these students are flying. If you have a plane in the sky, and someone takes a missile and shoots it down, what will happen to it? Likely it will crash unless some expert pilot is able to navigate or negotiate a crash landing. And that's what's happening to these students. People are focusing on high flyers and whatever. At the end of the day, they're all students, mainly children, and they're all flying. They're all trying to get to some destination. Okay. And if a missile in the form of whatever happened with this year's results of CSC, and it's not only this year, it's just that there's a preponderance of concerns this year, but there's concerns generally every year. But there's a preponderance this year. And if somehow the missile in the form of what's happened this year, the scenario that exists, some call it the fiasco, downs any of these children, any of these students, you know, the journey has been set back significantly and in some cases aborted.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you for your comments. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am all right. And you?
Yeah, not bad at all. Look, that lady, right, who spoke to you about the shares, the shares, I like the way she thinks, but I would say to her that she should not take out her wrath on the gentleman who bought
the company?
Company 51%. I think she should take it out on the political people who see her just as a consumer and never can see our people as owning. Because if the people who sold the shares had any vision, I cannot see whatever condition we were in that we would sell ICB or even BNB. If you're thinking about the future of Barbados and its people, because to me these institutions were too important in building capital and indeed the capital accumulation in Barbados, considering our own history. Because coming from slavery, I don't have to tell you, but we sadly needed some institutions that we could own. But I'll say this. And now, as far as I know, in relation to someone who said something later, the purchaser would have to get 90% of the shares in order to force the other
shares. Yeah, that's the share. Okay.
To sell that.
Okay. It has so to cross 90.
Ms. Johnson, in these circumstances, people have to recognize that investment is something, in fact, remember this when we were doing investment, something that we were always told. Investment is not something that you can just read in the textbook. Investment is a living subject, right? An investor has to be constantly monitoring the economic and financial environment.
Do we have the facility to do that? No.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, no, don't say, if you look at it right now, if you don't people say, all right, the shares were valued at a particular point. An important point to note in investment, look at the net asset value, the net asset value per share is higher than the share price. That is a good
indicator that it's going to be wanted by somebody.
What kind of price, share price? I mean, you'll find that very often in countries like Britain, so many companies, you know, they have people who work in companies and they'll look for companies to buy. And when they notice that the net asset value per share is higher than the share price, they take over. They see that there's a lot of capacity available.
Wasn't that the same thing that was said with Barbados Shipping and Trading when people were saying you have a share, that the share price is dropping, but your value is higher and you're running into a category where you would be a easy target for predators?
Yeah, you're easy target for predators if that is the case. Because somebody's going to realize, look, the people who are looking at, particularly they have companies in England, for example, and so on, people who deliberately work at these in companies, and they're looking for companies to buy rather than set up new companies. So therefore, you look at a company and you realize that's the position. Look at Lightning Power, for example. Those people paid, what, $25 for shares that were valued at 11, right? But they obviously would have seen that.
That it could go beyond 25, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. If not, they would never have done it.
More than 25 plus 11, too.
Right, they would never have done it. But what I meant to say all that to say this, in the case of the ICB, right, let's look at the current environment. We have COVID. And to me, for anybody to tell me that people are going to pay the same price listed some time ago, for the shares, and you could imagine anybody doing that in this kind of environment?
No.
So the best thing for the shareholders to do, all the 49% should be, I thought National Insurance would lead the people, decide not to sell. The best thing for them is this is not an environment to sell.
So that's why I made the comment earlier on, I don't know if you heard it, when I said at the start that if I look at what's happening with places with investments in tourism, and I singled out Las Vegas as an example, where you have people selling casinos in Las Vegas for $6 billion because they say the climate is not right now for them to do it. But they invest in other places like Macau and other places where they can get a return on the investment. But I'm sure if they saw a long-term benefit to it, they would either hold on because they say, you know, you could ride out the tide for 6 months or a year. So it's obvious that they don't see it turn around in 6 months or a year. So I agree with you. There are people who look for places to move their money around if they see things are getting difficult. But let's bring it back home to Barbados. How many of our investors are that type of person? And I don't think there are many.
No, what happened? You see, traditionally in Barbados, you don't know anything about investment. And I think people just ask somebody like, oh, what do you think about a company? You say, man, that's a good company. Nobody has analyzed the performance of the company or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, it's a good thing. Nobody don't know the quality of the people who run it, the shareholders, I mean, the directors and so on.
You know,
and so nobody looks at what is important.
So it's not nobody. There are people who do. Here's our challenge.
Yes.
I can tell you what the challenge is, mm-hmm. because sitting in this chair, mm-hmm. and in another one, I've faced a couple of them. Mm-hmm. When I did Morning Barbados with Carol Roberts on CBC, there was a guy who said to me on more than one occasion, do a piece in the morning on investments. And I kept trying to figure out how to do it. And one day I said to him, why should I invest? He said, but that's like asking me why to buy bananas. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, you may want bananas to do a smoothie, in which case a soft banana, you know, overripe, you could buy it. But you may want a banana to do a fruit salad, which means you would want a fairly firm banana that's not very ripe. So that's the same thing by asking me how to invest, because you may have different reasons for investing. I say, good, that's what you're going to do. Let me talk about bananas. He said, you serious? I say, yeah, let's start there, because you have to catch people's interest. If your only interest in investing is asking somebody, is that a good company? And they don't know whether you want it as a long-term investment to send your children who are now 5 years old to university when they get to age 20, or you want it in a short-term investment because you plan to retire in 5 years and you want the money. They can't tell you where to put your money, sir. But when you try to do that type of program try to help people to understand, you have to make it in such a way that they want to listen to you, or else they're going to say, this boring thing, this and now they're so talking a lot of boring foolishness. I ain't got no time with them. And unfortunately, that's what happens until you're faced with the crisis at the end. People call all the time and say, you know, radio should do this and y'all should do that and this is what you should be doing. But when you try to do it, the interest is not there unless you find a way to get people interested in what you're doing. This ICBL, even more perhaps than BNB, because it happened there too, and Sagicor, because it happened then, and Light and Power, because it happened then. When will we start paying attention to how we treat our finances, how we treat our commercial banks, how we treat the fact that as consumers, we don't get as good a deal as we think we should from our service providers? When? Because we just keep spinning top in mud, sir. And the same thing keep happening over and over and over and over. But always good hearing from you. And you always raise interesting points on that subject. Brass Dax, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you today?
I think I'm okay. I hope
okay,
I am.
Okay, well, I'm not. I'm calling on behalf of my grandchildren. We live at, they live with their maternal grandmother at Bullings Avenue. Right? Mm-hmm. We have a mahogany tree, a very large mahogany tree on the property. When mm-hmm. we bought the property, it was already there. Mm-hmm. We tried on countless occasions to have the tree removed, trimmed, or whatever, via Light and Power, NTW, government, DLP government, to no avail. Right? We were told that we cannot cut it down. By the National Trust, Town and Country Planning, because a law was passed that you cannot cut down a mahogany tree unless you have permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and it's very large. Anyhow, this morning it came down. A neighbor had just parked her car on the road and got out and took her baby out and just went into the house, and the tree came crashing down and crashed the car and everything. So that is writing off. Anyhow, the insurance came, and they're telling us that we have to pay for the car because
it's your
tree is on the path, is our tree.
Mm-hmm.
But when we are calling to get it trimmed and have a assistance for it. It's not our tree. It's the government tree. But when something like this happens, it's our tree.
Man.
Because the law was passed that you cannot cut down mahogany tree. Yeah. We tried MPW. Two men came last year. They looked at the tree. They said they didn't know where Minister Kurt Humphrey sent two men. He contacted MTW. They came and they said that they didn't know it was this magnitude. They don't have the equipment to cut down such a tree. We had asked if the government can borrow equipment from a private company and have it done. They said, well, y'all were going to go back there. We hear nothing from no one.
Ma'am, I'm sorry you didn't get more advice on this. Medford Mahogany, I know, because he makes mahogany furniture and figurines. I know at one point he used to have an interest in mahogany trees, where they were cut, whether you could get pieces from it, and he may have been able to advise them or advise you in how best to go about this. You have a real challenge on your hands because, as you say, the insurance company will say you're liable for the tree falling on the person's car. No damage to your house, hopefully. You will have
not
a roof over your head.
It didn't fall back, it
fell into
forward,
the road.
So it damaged the house opposite the house, and the house next to the house.
And that will have problems for you as well. Ma'am, you're going to need legal representation on a real large scale, I can tell you that. I hope somewhere in your interactions with the various government agencies that you have paperwork to back up your claims, that you went to them with it, because you are going to need it. That's the short piece of advice I could give you. But I can tell you, you're going to have legal challenges here with this one. And hopefully the ministries that you got engaged in, and this law that provides that you can't cut down mature trees, especially mahogany trees of a certain age, can help you somewhere. I hope you have paperwork to back up when the claims start coming in, because you will need it. But get some legal advice on it is my final word. Thank you for your calls and contributions on this Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you, Brother John, for keeping me on the straight and narrow. On behalf of the two-man team, have a good day.